Blog Talk Radio.
Children of all ages, this is the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Robert Winfrey, and happy Valentine's Day to anyone out there acknowledging, celebrating. It is the 14th of February, and we've still got a few more hours for the Ghostbusters prediction to come true about this being the end of the world. I very much doubt it, because Ghostbusters. But, I was made aware of that this week, because I'd forgotten about it. But we're all going to hope that for the next few hours, that movie was still wrong. All right, tonight we've got a relatively straightforward show. We're going to be previewing next week's card, live February the 21st, UFC Fight Night 83. Headlined by Cowboy versus Cowboy. No, Donald Cerrone will not be fighting himself. He will be fighting Alex Oliveira. It's not a bad card, top to bottom, especially for a free TV event. The vast majority of it is on Fox Sports 1. There's some good fights on that card. Nothing groundbreaking, but it's free TV on an off week. What do you expect? So if that's on your mind, if you want to talk a little bit about that, any other upcoming events in the world of MMA, I seem to recall that Bellator's latest freak show, Sideshow Circus event, will be happening this week. We won't be previewing it, but it's happening. I imagine Ken Shamrock and Hoist Gracie will fight to a double heart attack, no contest. But any of that, any of the other news that broke this week, if you want to call in, you want to talk about it, we take live callers here. The number to do so is 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. If you would like to call in using Skype, there is a Skype icon on the Blog Talk Radio player page. It's on the top of the player, off-center to the right. Click on that. Click through three or four boxes of dialogue. You'll get in my switchboard. I will get you on the air. All right. Here to help me out, as always, as we try to figure out which cowboy we're referring to when we refer to cowboy, 411 Mania's Jack of All Trades, Jeff Harris, is with us. Jeff, how are you doing this evening?
Good evening, Robert Winfrey. Once again, it is me. It is me, the J to the E to the double F Ray. And I would have to agree with you here, just in terms of talent. You have a lot of, you know, ranked talent on this card. You have some, you know, some good prospects, and you have some guys who are just good for showing up for some exciting fights. So, for a free card, you can be doing a lot worse for next weekend. But to everyone who's listening, happy Valentine's Day, happy President's Day weekend, and if the world does end tonight, well, at least I got to see the Deadpool movie, and it was pretty good. Chimichangas for everyone.
All right. Let's go ahead and jump into the main event. This event will come to you all next Sunday. By way of announcements, that means there won't be a show next Sunday evening. I will be covering the event for 411 Mania, and I can't cover the event live and host the show at the same time. I just can't do it. I can't multitask that much. There are limits. The main event, Donald Cerrone moving up to welterweight after a failed title fight against Rafael Dos Anjos. Maybe he's getting older. Maybe the weight cut's taken too much out of him. Maybe he just likes fighting and figures that welterweight's not the worst place to do so. This was supposed to be Donald Cerrone taking on Tim Means. I was really looking forward to that fight. I I can appreciate what Tim Means does as a gritty, forward, aggressive kind of blue-collar style fighter. Well, Tim Means was provisionally suspended for issues with his drug test and out-of-competition sample that was collected. I need to reiterate this, everybody. This does not mean he failed a drug test necessarily. It means there were some issues that they need to look into further. I think he's taking the Yoel Romero approach of claiming tainted supplements and fighters, guys. We talked a little bit about this last week. The supplement industry is utterly unregulated. And they tainted samples. This is not the boy who cried wolf. This is not a 1 in 1,000 chance of, oh, my supplement was tainted. All the freaking time this happens. If you're not 100% sure about what you're taking into your body, I'd stop. I mean, there's a lot of guys who, as this goes forward, are just kind of getting off supplements in general. So just be aware of that, guys. It's the supplement industry is, again, there's no regulation. Absolutely none. I could start one up running out of my kitchen tomorrow. And as long as I file the paperwork correctly for a business, I'm fine. But anyway, so Tim Means seems to be taking that approach. If it's true, hopefully there will be no major issues. If, you know, if he was actually cheating, I have very little sympathy. If it was, you know, if he's generally been screwed over there by a company not, you know, properly dealing with their product, then, you know, sucks. Then I have all the sympathy in the world because he's been the, you know, victim of an unfair situation. But while they're looking into that, he can't fight. Which is fine. I mean, if you have an issue like that, you have to investigate. You can't continue fighting if you might be cheating. So Means is, again, having his due process through that. And Alex Oliveira, also nicknamed Cowboy, stepped up, and he'll be fighting Donald Cerrone. Both these gentlemen are nicknamed Cowboys, so it's kind of fun that, as far as that goes. Oliveira's last fight was at lightweight, but his previous two in the UFC were at welterweight. He's kind of bounced back and forth between welterweight and lightweight in the UFC. You know, these two guys fight very similarly. This is a really good fight. I mean, the fact that this could go five rounds, I mean, there's a lot of aggression on both sides, strong grappling, strong striking. I mean, I got very little reason to pick against Donald Cerrone here. But, I mean, if you had to replace Tim Means, you could do worse than the Brazilian copy of Donald Cerrone, Jeff.
It's not a bad matchup. Alex Oliveira, he's done fairly well for himself in the UFC so far. He's on a 3-fight winning streak. He knocked out Piotr Hallman in his last fight. Coming off a loss to Gilbert Burns, he submitted, you know, a longtime veteran in KJ Nunes. So he has a nice record for himself. This is a huge step up in competition. Not only is it a step up in competition, it's really his first UFC main event. Now, granted, this fight is happening at the last minute due to a drug test failure. Cerrone's moving up to welterweight, but welterweight isn't really a bad fit for Donald Cerrone because he's one of the longer, rangier guys at lightweight. And welterweight lightweight is a tough cut for him, so welterweight might be a better fit. So really this, I see this as a good warm-up fight for Cerrone to test the waters at welterweight. Oliveira has two wins inside the UFC at welterweight, so this isn't really a bad move for him either to be fighting Cerrone at lightweight. So it's sort of like you have two experienced lightweights who are fighting at welterweight for this fight. But Oliveira is a guy who's fought at welterweight as well, so it doesn't really – it's not so bad that he's taking this fight at 170 either. He's a little shorter than Cerrone, but he has the same length of reach, so there's that. Oliveira is very good with his grappling, very good BJJ artist, but so is Cerrone for that matter. I would say he definitely has the edge striking and kickboxing, but – I think we discussed ad nauseum on this show just how big of a problem Cerrone's head is and just how he's a slow starter and he just has trouble showing up to fights. And I think we saw that in his title fight against Dos Anjos. Now, he was dealing with some personal issues, you know, his his grandmother who raised him, you know, is suffering from apparently a terminal disease. And apparently, you know, I'm sorry to say, they made it sound like on the Countdown show that she only has about a year left. So do the math. And maybe Cerrone just always has something that's sort of bugging him and gets in the way of his performances. I don't think it's going to happen here because this is the type of performance where Cerrone will probably excel. But in those big turning point fights, it's always an issue, is it not?
Historically, it certainly has been. You also need to be a very intelligent fighter, I think, to kind of consistently be able to beat Cerrone. One of his issues, again, he's kind of soft to the body. Now, I'm not sure if that's an issue of training or if it's, you know, still related to the fact that he had a pretty serious injury many years ago now, but he had a length of his intestine removed, actually. So I'm not sure if it's lingering effects of that or if he just, you know, has an issue with getting hit to the body, but Oliveira's not the kind of power striker or has the diversity necessary to potentially exploit that weakness, unlike, you know, guys who've been able to consistently find success against him, Anthony Pettis, Rafael Dos Anjos, you know, guys like that. I got Cerrone by stoppage here. I agree with you. This is the type of fight where some of the mental hiccups he has aren't going to be as big a deal. There's not a whole lot on the line. I mean, again, winning, money, main event, that's all important stuff. But he's been in main events before, and this seems like a very, you know, safe fight for him to take as far as that goes. Plus, if he comes out looking to get off quickly and has something to prove after that fight with Dos Anjos, you know, could be a bad night for Alex Oliveira. I got Cerrone by stoppage.
Well, coming off of a loss, and Cerrone is my favorite fighter in the UFC, but he's just not the type of guy who is confident enough in his skill set to become a champion, and he just never has been. He always just has this personal anxiety, and I don't really seeing it come into play here. And as long as he respects Oliveira, I don't really see him having any problems in this fight. The one thing, though, is Cerrone is very hittable, and he always has been hittable, sometimes to his detriment. And we know Oliveira, now we know he has power, except now he's, you know, now he's fighting Cerrone at welterweight, and he's not fighting, you know, Piotr Hallman at lightweight.
All right. Yeah, it's a solid main event, especially for free TV. You know, Donald Cerrone win, lose, or draw is very rarely in a fight that is not at least entertaining to watch. The Cone main event is going to be flying under the radar for a lot of people. But I'm actually looking forward to this one. Derek Brunson, currently riding a 3-fight winning streak, coming off of a TKO win over Sam Alvey, is taking on Ron Carnero, who returned to the UFC in his last fight and submitted Mark Munoz in February of last year. So it's been, it'll be a little under a year, exactly a week under a year since he last fought. But he's right, but Carnero has a 6-fight overall winning streak, and he looked great against Munoz. Again, this fight's flying under the radar, but if you've watched a lot of MMA and seen enough of both of these guys, and I happen to have done both in this case, this is a solid fight. Derek Brunson's only UFC loss is to Yoel Romero, and he was winning that fight up until he got caught in the third round. And you know, beating Yoel Romero is not an easy thing to do.
Both guys are ranked in the top 15, and both guys, well, Brunson especially, are arguably, you know, surging up the card. Brunson, the reason this fight is flying under the radar is because Brunson had some really bad performances early on in the UFC, and it's sort of that the stink of those failures sort of followed him around for a while, but lately he's been performing and performing very well. Carnero, his only problem is that he's been a little inactive. This is his first fight in just under a year, and we haven't seen him fight since February of last year. I mean, that's quite a while.
Yeah.
You know, especially when middleweight is competitive as it is right now. I mean, look at a guy like Robert Whittaker, who's suddenly ranked in the top 10 after the way he's been performing lately. And then you have, I mean, Uriah Hall is Uriah Hall, but then you have these moments where Uriah Hall freaking spinning back kicks Gegard Mousasi.
In the face.
Very interesting. This division is very interesting, and it's very competitive right now. And Brunson and Carnero could definitely be a part of that sooner rather than later.
Yeah, when picking a winner here, I'm going back and forth because I have a lot of appreciation for the way Carnero has evolved his game since being cut from the UFC the first time. His last fight in the UFC before returning was back in, like, 2008. He lost a split decision to Rio Chonan. He's a very talented jiu-jitsu practitioner.
I mean, did you see what he did to Mark Munoz? He just, like, he bullied the
ran him over. Just ran him over.
He made Munoz look like he did not belong in the cage that night. At all.
At all. At all. Derek Brunson has some good grappling. He was getting some successful takedowns and kind of out-wrestling Yoel Romero. And, again, amateur wrestling to wrestling in the cage, there's a gap there, but it's still incredibly impressive to kind of get the better of Yoel Romero in the wrestling department. I'm going to go with Brunson. I don't know. Maybe it's just too many years and miles for Carnero. Maybe it's the inactivity issues. But I think Brunson can take this one. I think Carnero's going to maybe struggle a little bit to get him down. And, I mean, on the feet, both guys have power, but I feel a little bit more confident picking Brunson to just be the more technical, be the more patient, be the more effective fighter over the course of the fight. And I don't know if he'll get a finish. I don't like predicting finishes for either of these guys. I don't like predicting a finish for this fight. Because both guys are capable of doing it anywhere. But I think Brunson's going to take this one and, you know, kind of continue moving up the ladder here. But, again, flying under the radar in a really solid co-main event.
I'm picking Brunson to win here. Just because both guys have ways to finish this fight, but I just think Brunson is going to use his wrestling. He's going to try and take Carnero down. Now, if Carnero's prepared for that, that could be a problem for Brunson. But we've seen that Brunson can knock people out now, too. So that's another important factor to look at. But I'm sticking with Brunson to win, like you.
All right, next up, believe it or not, I'm really looking forward to this fight as well. Cody Garbrandt is going to fight John Lineker. Now, you might wonder why I'm excited for this one. Both these guys are strikers by trade. Lineker, much more a brawler. Garbrandt, usually more technical on the boxing side of things. John Lineker, I can't call him fat John Lineker at bantamweight because he's never missed bantamweight. In fact, he's made bantamweight more reliably than he's made flyweight. But his bantamweight debut, officially, against Francisco Rivera was one of the most insane. That was the craziest 2 minutes and 8 seconds of fighting you'll ever see. Seriously, if you have not seen his fight with Francisco Rivera, look it up. It's only 2 minutes and 8 seconds, and it is a gunfight from start to finish. Cody Garbrandt fights out of Team Alpha Male, and I don't hold that against him in this case. He's very young in the sport. He's only 7-0, undefeated. And again, he stopped Marcus Brimage, got a unanimous decision over Henry Briones. Primarily a striker, more with his hands than anything else. But, you know, again, for all my jabs that I throw occasionally at the Team Alpha Male guys, if you go there knowing what you need to round out your skill set, you could do worse than trying to, you know, round, because Garbrandt came in with a striking background. So if he wants to work on his grappling and his scrambles, Team Alpha Male is not at all the worst place he could be. My only issue with Garbrandt in this fight, he's going to be bigger. He's a very big bantamweight. He's tall for the division. My only issue with Garbrandt is he's a tad hittable. And John Lineker, you know, that guy hits hard. I've gone back and forth on this one. Lineker can win if he can sucker Garbrandt into a brawl. If these two guys are going to hit each other and then the game plan goes out the window and we just start swinging leather, I think that favors Lineker. And again, Garbrandt being so young in the sport, I reserve the right to change my pick in this case because I've really got to think about this one some more. Right now, though, I'm going to go ahead and pick Garbrandt. I think the ability that he has to improve his overall game, combined with greater technique and the physical advantages that he'll have over Lineker, I think he's got the tools to take this one, but this could easily turn into a wild fight, and that's one of the reasons I'm looking forward to it. Jeff, what do you think about this one?
I love this fight. You have a young, undefeated prospect in Cody Garbrandt, who comes from a great camp, against a young, exciting fighter who you have to consider a potential contender who's rising up the ranks at bantamweight. And Lineker is finally fighting at bantamweight where he should have been the entire time, instead of wasting his time trying to make flyweight and constantly missing weight. Because he and his manager, Alexis Davis, were just so stubborn about him fighting at flyweight. And he fought at bantamweight against a tough fighter in Francisco Rivera, and he more than held his own. I mean, he finished Francisco Rivera, and that was a good win for him. So he needs to realize this is where he should be fighting. He can't feasibly make flyweight. He couldn't reliably make 125 pounds, and this is just a better place for him. Now, this is an interesting fight because we're going to find out just how good and how skilled Cody Garbrandt is. But because Lineker is so powerful and he is so fast, I got to favor him for this fight, and I'm expecting Lineker to win this one and continue his move up the bantamweight ranks. But I'm happy because Lineker is such a talented fighter. He's not a bantamweight, and for years, he and his manager were just way too stubborn in thinking he was a flyweight, you know, while constantly embarrassing both himself and the UFC by missing weight all those times. It was terrible. Now he's where he needs to be, and he looks like he's doing well here, and I think that's going to continue against Cody Garbrandt.
All right, we've got, again, these are not necessarily the biggest name fighters, but you've got some really good fights here.
I mean,
There's
look,
a
Lineker is ranked number 11 right now. He could be in the top 10 very soon and a very serious contender for the title if he
Yeah.
continues.
Hey, this guy, he's a borderline I mean, he was a borderline contender at flyweight. His only flyweight loss, I want to say, was to Ali Bagatinov.
Garbrandt is undefeated. I mean, this
Yeah.
is huge. If he could walk away with a win here, this solidly puts him in the rankings, and you have to start taking note of Garbrandt moving up the ranks as well. I mean, so you have guys who are not big names, but I mean, they are ranked where they are for a reason because they are good.
Yeah, at featherweight, this is another one that's going to fly completely under the radar. But Dennis Bermudez is going to fight Tetsuya Kawajiri.
You have a guy ranked, you have number 8 against number 12 right here. You have two more top-ranked fighters in this fight.
Wait, Bermudez is 8 after having lost 2 in a row?
Well, I mean, he did go on like a 6-7 fight winning streak.
Yeah, he had a good
So,
winning
yeah.
streak going for a while. I'm just surprised that as competitive as
Well,
featherweight is.
think about it this way. The guys he lost to when he fought them were ranked around the same or above him. Ricardo Lamas, when he lost to Lamas, he was ranked high above Bermudez. And he's ranked above Stevens right now, but Stevens, I think, was
He missed
surging
weight
when
for that fight.
Okay, that was. Well, I mean, Stevens was having a good run at featherweight. He lost to Swanson, as I recall, and then he lost to Oliveira, right?
Holloway was his last loss.
Yeah.
But yeah, I
So
think he
he
did lose
lost
to Oliveira
he
too.
lost all of Stevens was high up on the card when he beat Bermudez, even though he didn't make weight. And so on the strength of that, they still have him ranked in the top 10. But then again, it's other journalists who are doing the rankings, so go figure.
It's also the UFC ranking system, which, as we know, is, to put it kindly, a work in progress. I like this fight a lot. Kawajiri rebounded from that loss to Clay Guida pretty well. He's won his last two. Bermuda is another strong wrestler. He's all, I mean, neither guy is exceptional on the feet. Both guys are kind of grinding wrestlers. So, who do you favor in that context? I'm going to freely admit, this is probably a bit more of picking with my heart than with my head, but I think Kawajiri can do this. Bermuda's had
As a
that
win
good
over,
run.
over Dennis Siver, and that's a pretty good win.
Yeah. I mean, Bermuda's had that good run, but I feel like he may have peaked and has stopped diversifying and evolving as a fighter. And I mean, granted, Kawajiri stopped evolving a couple of years ago. But considering that this is going to be kind of strength against strength, again, both guys wrestling grappling based, it's not an easy task to out wrestle and out muscle Kawajiri. I mean, he did get beat by Clay Guida, but that was actually a much more competitive fight than the scores allowed, and Bermudez is not the same pressure grinder that Clay Guida is. So I'm gonna go with Kawajiri here, and I'll freely admit that's probably a tad more emotional than logical because I got a real soft spot for the Crusher.
I'm going with Dennis Bermudez. Bermudez has had some tough losses. He hasn't fought in a little while, but I just think he's a little more well-rounded, with his striking, with his grappling than Kawajiri is.
All right. At middleweight, Chris Camozzi will take on Joe Riggs. Camozzi is coming off of his second first round. No, sorry. He beat Tom Watson before that. I was going to say he's coming off of his second submission, first round submission loss to Jacare Souza, but he beat Tom Watson after that. That was a weird fight, too. But
Yeah,
Tom
Watson
Watson's a
lost
weird
once
fighter.
due to some repeated strikes to the groin.
Yeah, there were some inside leg kicks going back and forth that went low in those that went into the groin in that fight. Joe Riggs is coming off of, I believe, his first UFC win in how long was that? He got it last in September of last year. Prior to
Come on.
that, his last
Do we really
UFC
want to
win.
call this a win, though? I
The
don't.
Ron Stallings fight? Yeah, okay, that's fair. I mean, it's technically his first win.
Disqualification win.
It is the first win on his UFC record since he beat Jason Von Flew in August of 2006. So, yeah, it was nearly a decade between UFC wins. It was a
Know the Joe
DQ.
Buck comic strips, Robert?
I've read some Dilbert here and there, yeah.
Remember when Dilbert was followed by a doom cloud?
Yes, I do.
That's what's happening to Joe Riggs in life. No disrespect, Joe Riggs, but you got a doom cloud following you around, and that's not going to be good when you get in the cage with Chris Camozzi. Camozzi is going to take Joe Riggs apart, or something embarrassing is going to happen to Joe Riggs again. It's just how it is, Joe Riggs.
It's true. Joe Riggs has some of the oddest luck in all of MMA. And I mean that's documented. His first win comes by way of illegal upkick from that exacerbated damage that had been done legally. He had the injury against Ben Saunders that just a bit of a neck injury that he re-aggravated.
He lost the
It's
title shot to Matt Hughes because he failed to make weight
that
10 years
yeah,
ago.
it's just his career is like a black comedy of errors.
He got into the fight with Nick Diaz in a hospital. Just all sorts of crazy stuff has happened to this dude.
And yeah, bearing all that in mind, I think Camozzi's going to be able to beat Joe Riggs. And
It's
kicking off
not
the
even
main
a
card.
question. It's just a matter of inevitability, Robert Winfrey.
Well, we'll see if Joe Riggs. I think the only thing he hasn't done is slip on something while going to the cage and, crack his knee open. I mean, that's about the only bad thing that hasn't
Shot
happened
himself
to
in
him.
the hand. His UFC return was delayed because he shot himself in the hand while he was cleaning a loaded gun.
You don't clean a loaded weapon.
That's what he did, though.
I know. As someone who grew up around firearms, there's some basic, you know, don't be stupid stuff that goes into, hey, don't clean a loaded weapon. But, all right, and kicking off the main card at lightweight, James Krause is taking on Shane Campbell. This is, again, Shane Campbell is a very, very talented striker. Again, one of the things that people, he gained a degree of notoriety after a fight in the World Series of Fighting, I believe it was 18, when after dropping his opponent with a body kick, he dropped and did the, you know, Hadouken pose from Street Fighter. Lost his UFC debut to John McDessie. That was a really good fight, though, and he lit McDessie up with some hard leg kicks. He beat Elias Silverio his last time out. James Krause, the James Krause, coming off of a win over Darren Cruikshank. He got robbed against Lazaro, I seem to recall. Just really kind of a tough, talented, all-around fighter. If Krause tries to box with Shane Campbell, he's going to lose. Campbell's a very good kickboxer. But I think Campbell's going to kind of struggle with the well-roundedness of Krause. And again, Krause is really inconsistent. Man, this is a tough one. I'm going to go with James Krause, but A, I reserve the right to alter my opinion before I have to submit answers, my picks for the roundtable. And B, this is, again, on paper, this is a very close, very competitive fight. I'm leaning towards Krause, but, you know, ask me tomorrow, I'll probably tell you Campbell type thing. Jeff, how do you feel about this one? This should be a pretty good, you know, hot opener to the main card.
It's a good, I think it's a good little matchup. I'm favoring Krause for the most part. You know, Krause has been mostly a mid-level performer in the UFC. I mean, look at his record. He has a 500 UFC record at 3-3. He's been a little inconsistent, but I think he's skilled enough where I see this as a very winnable fight for him.
All right, that's the main card. On the prelims, the first four of which are taking place on Fox Sports 1, the two before that on Fight Pass. Alex Garcia's fighting. He's only lost in the UFC to Neil Magny and future UFC welterweight champion and all. Beat Mike Swick his last time out. Fighting Sean Strickland. Strickland, who beat Igor Araújo, lost to Santiago Ponzinibbio. I seem to recall feeling he should have lost that Luke Barnett fight, but I might be wrong about that. That's a pretty good fight. Oh, yeah, that's Tarzan. I always remember him by his nickname instead of his... I'll go with Sean Strickland there, actually, but that's a pretty good fight. At middleweight, Daniel Sarafian will face Oluwole Bamgose. I'm probably mispronouncing his last name. Bamgose stepped up on short notice to fight and lose to Uriah. Because Uriah Hall looks phenomenal against guys of that caliber. Sarafian had that. He injured Antonio Dos Santos. There was a thumb injury, I seem to recall, or one of his fingers got dislocated. And he popped it right back in, but he had to get the ref to stop the fight while he did so. So he can't do that. I'll go with Sarafian. I'm looking very impressive. Trevor Smith will fight Leonardo Augusto Guimarães, he's fought in the UFC before. I can't remember his record off the top of my head, though. Trevor Smith coming off a win over Dan Miller. Trevor Smith's just a really kind of solid, grinding wrestler. And given that I can't remember anything about Guimarães, I'll go with Smith. At welterweight, Jonathan Webb will fight Nathan Coy. Coy lost his UFC debut. He got submitted by Danny Roberts. And Webb has fought in the UFC at least once. I'll go with Webb there just because Coy's been decidedly unimpressive. Then on Fight Pass, we have a women's bantamweight fight between Marion Renault and Ashley Evans-Smith. Renault coming off of that loss to Holly Holm, but looked pretty good against Jessica Andrade. had a good winning streak going before that, actually. I'll go with Renault there. And then, because we need a heavyweight fight, Anthony Hamilton is fighting Shamil Abdurakhimov. Abdurakhimov coming off of that loss to Timothy Johnson. It was only a one-round fight. I'm confusing Johnson fights. He didn't look bad in that fight, but he just kind of got overwhelmed at the end by the pressure of Johnson. And Anthony Hamilton, coming off a win over Daniel Omelianchuk, these are two low-level heavyweights. We just pray it ends quickly. I'm going to go with Hamilton there right now, though I might change my mind later. And again, we just pray it ends quickly. All right, Mr. Harris, what are your burning desires from that card? Because we got some pretty good prelims there.
The women's bantamweight fight definitely looks interesting to me. The Trevor Smith fight and Garcia versus Strickland, I think, are definitely worth a look.
All right, that is UFC Fight Night 83. We'll come to you Sunday the 21st, so a week from tonight. And again, I will have live coverage, so there won't be a show that evening. I need to give a shout-out to Mark Radulich, who this week will be covering Bellator Freak Show. Ken Shamrock and Hoyce Gracie in the main event. Co-main event of Kimbo Slice, real name Kevin Ferguson, and Dada 5000, and I wouldn't be shocked if that's actually his real name at this point. I need to thank Mark a great deal for that, because my sanity when it comes to MMA can only take so much. And that just might have done me in. All right, Jeff, we had some news break this week, so let's come up that you think we need to talk about.
So you sort of confirmed that Yoel Romero did test for a banned substance, so there were rumors going around that Melky Kawa also did, Yoel Romero's manager, also did help perpetuate that maybe Romero's B sample would test negative and he would appeal the results of the positive test. That didn't happen. USADA did confirm that he tested positive for a banned substance. They aren't saying what it was. His manager, Malky Collar, is claiming it was for a supplement, a contaminated supplement that has not been unnamed. Collar claimed that he was tested by both Romero's team and by USADA, and he expects a resolution at the end of the week. There was no resolution. Nothing has been said by USADA regarding Romero's test after this, or regarding his punishment. Based on the rules, if you do fail a test through a contaminated supplement and you can't prove it, you can still get away with a reprimand, but you can also still be punished the full length of whatever, I guess, the punishment is, which I believe in this case would be a 2-year ban. All I have to say is Melky Kawa had this interview with Yoel Romero on the MMA Hour. He said this would reach a resolution at the end of the week. That didn't happen. You have to understand that Melky Kawa is a manager. Romero is his client, and he is supporting his client, you know, which is fine. That's his job. He's doing what he has to do. However, that also doesn't mean he's telling the truth either. So what do you make of this, Robert Winfrey?
Again, I'm well aware of how what's a good analogy? The conception of the Wild West, how Wild West the supplement industry is. I mean, there was very recently in New York State, the guy, someone with, not the FDA, but like, either the Surgeon General or some health organization within the state went to a GNC store to just check at, you know, to make sure everything is what's on the label. And over 50%, I want to say, of what they tested was contaminated to some degree with stuff not listed on the labels. Some of it is accidental because, again, this is an unregulated body here. There's no federal oversight. There's no one testing the facilities. It's crazy. Again, I could legally set one up in my kitchen. Perfectly legal. Then there are, again, because this is such a, industry like this, there are those who deliberately lace stuff with various steroids or substances to give their consumers more of a pop for their, a pop for their dollar, and just don't tell them what they're taking into their body. It's a very, the issue of the supplement industry is pretty big. And I mean,
How
look,
could everyone be, everyone who's doing this, who's failing a drug test, how could all of them be taking a contaminated supplement and just didn't know? How
again,
can that be possible?
I don't think it's an issue of every single one of them. That's the case.
But that's what they're all saying. That's what Gilbert Melendez, that's his excuse. Hector Lombard,
I'm not
Even
sure again.
when Overeem went before the commission, like he went through this whole song and dance about how he took medicine that he didn't know had testosterone in it, and he produced like a vial. And then Anderson Silva was saying, "I was taking stuff for my ED, and I didn't know it was contaminated." That's the excuse he went with. He said none of them knew, none of them knowingly took any sort of PED or steroids. How
Now,
can,
this is one
I
of
mean,
those
do we
things
believe
where.
that's a rampant problem when it happens in baseball, when guys get exposed in baseball?
Well, the issue in baseball was much more actually anabolic steroids. But again, the
All
sub.
those guys in
Are all of
baseball say
them.
they're clean athletes. A-Rod says, "I'm a clean athlete. I don't take PEDs."
Yeah, well. Now, again, do I think all of them had this issue of, just being the victim of an industry that is unsupervised and rife with, corruption? Not all of them. That's statistically unlikely. Most of them, believe it or not, again, you could go down to your local GNC store. There's one 5 minutes away from me. If I were to test everything in that store, just for what's on the for discrepancies from the label, much less other steroids or hormones that may or may not be listed, because hey, they might be part of that big
Okay,
proprietary
but
blend.
Robert, these stories have been going around for a long time, and a lot of fighters have been claiming, contaminated supplements before. Sean Sherk famously did that. So if that
Yeah.
was really true, and you're a fighter, and your body is your livelihood, and now you know you're getting tested, why would you be so reckless by ingesting a supplement? If you have to make so many sacrifices to be a fighter, and you're so and you have an on-staff nutritionist who measures all your food, measures all your liquids, measures all this stuff with portion sizes and your diet and all this other nonsense, why would you be so reckless with something like a supplement?
Well, some of this is.
That's why none of this scans for me. None of it. None of it.
Well, there's a reason supplementation, when you is first of all perfectly legal, and second of all, Yoel Romero is almost 40. There are things that he's going to have to do to compete with younger guys, and my thing is, if he is again, if he's above board. I'm trying to remember how Luke Thomas phrased it because I agreed with him. Fighters are going to be placed with a burden of, of having to hold an industry accountable when there is no oversight for that industry. It's an unfair burden on the fighters.
I
They say,
disagree.
you can take supplements. That's perfectly legal. If the guys selling them and manufacturing them are causing, are not responsible, are crooks, or
I don't
just
agree with Luke
bad
Thomas
luck.
At all on this issue. I'm sorry.
No, that's
he
fine. You can disagree.
He was giving Yoel Romero way too much benefit of the doubt. And it's fine if you want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but these are the same people who have been trumpeting that over half the industry is on steroids. So if these guys are failing drug tests from, you know, the random testing for USADA, then to me we don't have a supplement problem. We have a PED problem, and guys are getting exposed. So if you're going to go for clickbait headlines and you're going to trumpet those numbers from other fighters claiming how rampant this problem is, you can't just turn around and say, oh, they're not feeding, they're just taking tainted supplements. They didn't know. This is beyond naive, Robert.
Again, I don't think everyone is in that case. Again, I have no doubt there are fighters have deliberately taken substances and are now going to make that claim. I think
then why isn't it these guys? Why isn't it Tim Means? Why isn't it Yoel Romero? When every guy fails a test, they're suddenly going to have their contaminated supplement excuse ready.
Yeah, that's going to become a very old excuse very, very quickly. Now, my thing about this is,
everyone
I
can't
think
be on contaminated supplements, Robert. It's just, look, even King Mo was on that train too. He took something that someone else gave him, and he says he just didn't know. But I mean, how ignorant can you be? How ignorant, if fighting is so important to your livelihood, how can you be so ignorant that you're taking these supplements? And you're not doing your due diligence.
You know, my honest answer there, I think a lot of fighters probably didn't. There's probably a great contingent of fighters that don't realize how loose supplement industry is.
Why take supplements? What do supplements really do for you? Unless they're giving you like placebos or giving you actual PEDs that are improving your performance.
What supplements do is they give you a concentrated dose of something that, I mean, here's the other crazy thing. Even something as simple as like whey protein, which, you know, they sell in those big containers and you're supposed to take before you work out.
I mean, that's whey protein. You make it like for a protein shake. You know,
and
that doesn't
because
have
where it comes from and how it's handled, it can be easily contaminated by, again, somebody working out of their garage.
Okay.
This is an industry. I mean, if you want to, as an example.
Okay, now, but here, we're just going in circles here. Here's my thing. Because I feel like this has been evident that, you know, fighters are hearing stories about fighters having contaminated supplements. Why are they not more mindful of this, and why are they rolling the dice? Unless it's all BS and they're all cheating and they know what they're doing. I can't believe that, man.
A perfectly legal supplement regimen is a great thing to use because it helps your body absorb other nutrients. It can provide you with energy. It can alter what you're taking into your body in a much more efficient manner. It's just, again, if I was a fighter right about now, I would personally have stopped because I know personally, I am aware of how bizarre that industry is.
Stop fighting or just stop using supplements?
I'd stop using supplements personally.
Okay, but like you hear all these stories about fighters saying, "I my drug test was due to contaminated supplements, blah, blah, freaking blah." Are all these fighters just that ignorant of what these other guys are saying? And they're still not being careful with what they're ingesting.
Now, and again, sometimes it might just be, you know, the order in which you grab a bottle off of the shelf. The bottle right behind the one you grab might be perfectly fine, but the one you grabbed isn't. It's, again, that whole industry desperately needs an overhaul. And if you're a fighter, I think if Yoel Romero can prove that his supplement, what he was, that that's what caused it, he'll get off lightly with, you know, whatever happened. But if you're the third guy or the fourth guy who's going to come forward and say tainted supplement, that's going to wear thin very quickly. Now, I agree that.
Here's what I want to know. Is there a precedent for pro athletes actually proving this contaminated supplement excuse?
Yes. This is not, again, the supplement industry is full of contamination and
Maybe
corruption.
not necessarily in the UFC, but for other sports that USADA does tests for.
I'm pretty sure there is. Again, this is something that they have written into their rules. That's why there's a loophole where if you can prove this, then they have some
Now,
discretion about the punishments.
I believe I looked at this supplement 411 rule, and I believe that under USADA's guidelines, they basically say you're taking this at your own risk and you're still responsible even if you don't know what's in the ingredients.
There's a degree of personal accountability that has to be there. Personally, I'm of the opinion that given what that industry is, and again, it's insanity. By all means, anyone out there listening who
Okay, and
thinks
here's
I
what
might
I
be
would,
off the
and here's
market,
my other
look it
question.
up.
If this industry is so, I mean, is so reckless,
It
why
is.
isn't it getting, why is it, and it's hurting people, like really hurting people. And the truth is that these guys don't know, are being misled. Why are they not being more heavily regulated in terms of standards? Factories, what's getting mixed in, and all that other nonsense. Why
Because
will
of
the federal
illegal.
government regulate? They'll regulate college football. They'll regulate football. Or they'll give other professional sports leagues like freedom to be a monopoly, but they won't regulate supplements.
Because it falls into a category of product that is not immediately under the purview of the Food and Drug Administration. It's not food as it's legally defined. It is not a drug in the sense of, you know, even aspirin. It falls between those two. It is not, therefore, directly under the purview of the FDA. The FDA can inspect
None of these products are
manufacturers.
FDA approved. What if these? I thought some of these products do get FDA approval, or do they not?
No.
None of them do.
No, not to my knowledge.
Well,
They're.
here, let me see, because I've taken, sometimes I take this powder called Dynamic Fruit and Greens. So, let me see. This is like a vegetable, a fruit and vegetable replacement, to kind of give you the same nutrients. So let me
Yes.
see here.
Now have a look again. Again, your local GNC store, and anyone can walk in there and just look at stuff. I don't think there's any FDA approval on any of it. The FDA can
You might be
examine.
right. So
Yeah, the FDA can examine manufacturers that they are made aware of.
okay, so
So
here
if you've
this
got a
day okay.
huge,
These
if you've got a
statements
huge
have not been
manufacturing
evaluated by
factory.
the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. So, I guess,
Yeah,
is
it's
that the
utterly
disclaimer?
unregulated.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. It's utterly unregulated. And again, there's a segment in the documentary, Bigger, Stronger, Faster,
Yeah.
where the documentary guy looks at the supplement industry for one of his segments and explores just how crazy it is. And nothing's changed since that documentary came out.
I just can't believe all these guys have.
I mean, I'm with you. Are 100% of the guys who are going to claim tainted supplements actually taking tainted supplements? Have they just been, you know, the victim of that? No, I don't believe 100% of them. That's the issue. It would be a huge statistical anomaly.
Here's my red flag with Romero and Kawa. Kawa and Romero said there would be a resolution this week. That never happened.
Yeah, there's Kawa is.
Or last week, rather.
Yeah, no, Malki Kawa is. About the same level.
He's stumping for his client, and I
He
understand
is.
that. I'm not saying he shouldn't do that, but I mean, he was also sort of basically suggesting that his B sample would come out negative, and that wasn't the case either. So.
Yeah, no, agents, you know, what are you going to do
All
about
right.
him?
Well, John Jones was also, speaking of the news, John Jones was also in the news for a couple different reasons.
Yeah.
He got pulled over for speeding, and he didn't have his driver's license or insurance information in his car. So, I mean, it wasn't like he was drunk driving or anything this time, but here's all I have to really say on this. How hard is it to have a copy of your driver's license in your car? Not even your actual driver's license, because what, you might forget your wallet or something at home. How hard is that?
I don't know.
Robert,
John
drive
Jones.
A car. Robert, do
yeah.
you drive a car? When have you ever not had your driver's license or a copy of your insurance information inside your car?
Never. They are always
See, this is just like
there.
One of those facts. It's just like one of those. It's like one of the easiest things you can do in life. It's just something.
Insurance stays in the glove box of your car. Always.
It's always there. I have no reason to take it out unless they send me a new one, and then I print it out and I just fold it up, put it in my car. It's there. I don't like
John Jones. For as great as he is as a fighter,
he's a man-child.
He makes the worst decisions possible when it comes to automobiles. Just the dirt worst decisions. John,
he's a millionaire. He can get a driver. If he doesn't want to have a driver's license and insurance, he can get a driver. He can afford one to just drive him around wherever. Someone who's discreet and has to sign an NDA. A guy who will drive him to house parties or to see some hookers or something or to some not so savory places. Drivers will do that for him. So I mean, that could probably take some of the stress out of his life. I don't understand why he doesn't.
I'm with you. I mean, for whatever reason, his decision making when it comes to anything involving automobiles is so phenomenally bad that it almost defies reason. It's really that bad.
Getting a speeding ticket, that to me is not what's annoying about this. Just to not have, for him to have been in the situations he's been in, and for him not to have, like, at least a copy of your driver's license in your car, a copy of your insurance, I don't get it, man. It's ponderous. It's ponderous.
I'm with you. It's utterly baffling to me that he can continue to make those kinds of bad decisions when it comes to an area that is so clearly defined and something that he could so easily get around. I mean, like you said, this isn't a guy like, you know, since we're talking about him, Tim Means or, you know, Brad Pickett, just a, you know, a low-level fighter who's, you know, maybe struggling a little bit, depending on how frequently they're able to fight. John Jones is not hard up for money. He could easily hire a driver. And, I mean, again, is the issue, you know, again, him getting a speeding ticket and, you know, a minor citation, that's nothing. That's a non-issue. The bigger issue is his decision-making process as it pertains to this. And it's just bad. John, hire a driver. I'm begging you, this will solve your problems when it comes to automobiles while you're on probation. Hire someone to drive you around, and you never have to worry about this again.
Okay, so speaking of John Jones, it was announced that the rematch with Daniel Cormier is going to happen on April 23rd in Las Vegas at UFC 197. This will also feature Demetrius Johnson versus Henry Cejudo in the co-main event at flyweight, and also Robert Whittaker versus Rafael Nadal at middleweight. So we're finally going to get this fight, provided that John Jones doesn't, you know, just doesn't decide to John Jones this up again, let's just make
that. As long as Daniel Cormier can avoid injury, we're all going to be fine, and we'll just have that fight.
So, does John Jones regain the title here, Robert? Does he
easily
reforge his legacy? Easily.
Look, nothing has changed about Daniel Cormier's skill set from their previous fight to this one. Nothing about John Jones has diminished. If anything, the way John has kind of altered his body while still maintaining, you know, his appropriate weight. John is he was scary when he looked a little bit awkward given his frame. Now that he's filled out, John Jones is terrifying. I would not be shocked at all if he finishes Cormier this time.
I just think John is just one of those, for as crazy as his personal life might be, I just think he's just one of those ridiculously gifted, amazing athletes
that he is a once-in-a-lifetime fighter. I mean, the UFC throws that phrase around way too loosely, but John Jones is...
He is this sports Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan or whatever. He has everything, and even what he doesn't have, he makes up for everywhere else. And I love Daniel, but they fought before, and Daniel let it get to him. And here's the thing. When they're inside the cage, John Jones, he's a killer. John Jones doesn't get emotional when he fights. He does his job. And Daniel couldn't do what he likes to do against guys. He couldn't take Jones down. He couldn't grind him. He couldn't, use his game plan. I see no reason to pick against John Jones here. But you never know.
I don't pick against John Jones at light heavyweight. I'll be perfectly frank. I don't think there's anyone at heavyweight I'd pick to beat John Jones right now.
Jones is he's just a special kind of athlete, a special kind of fighter. And fighting is a complex sport. And, you know, we've been wrong many times in our predictions. And
we'll be in the future.
Yeah, and this will be a tough fight, no question. I mean, it wasn't a ridiculously one-sided dominating victory for Jones. There were a couple tough rounds. So I'm not saying it's impossible for Cormier to win this fight. I just don't – I'm not betting on that. So we'll see. But the fight is happening. It's happening a little over 2 months from now, so we're finally going to see this fight again. So provided John Jones gets a driver's license and gets insurance information in his car.
John Jones should not be allowed to make decisions regarding cars right now. It just doesn't make sense. But
here's the other thing he said. Like he said, he posted a video that I think he quickly deleted, where he said he's 5 months sober. In February, meaning he's only been sober since like October. Do the math on that one, folks. His arrest happened. His last arrest was just under or over a year ago, right?
A little bit under. It was in April, I want to say, of 15.
Okay. So.
But if it's only been 5 months, you know, getting sober is hard. I've got family members that still struggle with it, so I'll give them a shout out. Keep going. Go, you know, it's one day at a time.
All right. Well.
So if that's true, you know, congratulations on being sober
saying,
that long.
He keeps moving the goalposts on his sobriety.
I'll give you that one.
His timeline, kind of like Kurt Angle, when Kurt Angle would do interviews, he keeps kind of moving the timelines of when he's been cold turkeying drugs and alcohol and whatnot.
Well, that's because like Kurt Angle's still not sober.
Like one time Kurt Angle said he's been cold turkey free of drugs for 3 years. Another time he said it was 18 months or something. So I have no idea.
Well, Kurt Angle's also suffered more than a few head injuries.
So.
But yeah, I'm really hoping that John can just get old, get beyond.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so too. Just because he's that insane of an athlete. So,
he's
anything else
right
in
now?
The
best talent that MMA has ever seen.
Anything else happen in the news that we want to address?
Let me think. Vanderlei Silva's going to Bellator. Apparently, they're going to try to put together a Fedor Vanderlei fight.
He still has to get cleared by the athletic commission.
So, he does. Yeah, he still has some issues regarding that, but
they have to rethink his punishment. I know.
Yeah.
I think they said they didn't have the authority to indefinitely suspend him, but I believe he's still technically suspended until they resolve. It's not resolved.
Yeah. A outside court authority said they could not indefinitely suspend him without a date, without reevaluation. And if the fight takes place in Japan, it doesn't matter because there's no regulatory body. But I don't know if we talked a little bit about Benson a couple of weeks ago when he signed with Bellator.
Yeah.
I think that's
well, he's
it for
fighting
news,
for the title.
He's fighting.
He's
yeah,
fighting,
he's fighting.
Kreshkov.
I actually had to look up if Bellator still had a welterweight champion.
Let me see.
But
here.
Yeah, they do.
He hasn't fought Douglas Lima last July, so he hasn't fought in a little while, but yeah, he'll be fighting for the welterweight title in his Bellator debut.
And more than likely taking that.
Bellator 153 in April.
Didn't they announce that Aljamain Sterling re-signed with the UFC this week?
I didn't hear that. I hope that's true, though.
I seem to recall him saying that he was announcing where he was signing, and I think it was he was sticking with the UFC, but I'd have to double-check.
No, he's going to apparently, the word is that Sterling will announce where he plans to go on Monday. So wherever he's going, if he is going to Bellator, if he's staying with the UFC, apparently we'll find out tomorrow on when he goes on the MMA Hour. That's what he says on Instagram. So
okay.
If he has re-signed with the UFC, he hasn't made any announcement there.
Okay.
I hope he has. I mean he's the number 5 bantamweight in the UFC, so I hope they do kind of keep him. I can kind of see what the situation was with Benson Henderson, if they didn't really want to match his Bellator offer. But Sterling is that's a surging fighter you definitely want to keep right now. But whatever.
Especially at bantamweight. We've talked about this a little bit before, that bantamweight's in an odd spot. The UFC does not have a stranglehold, for want of a better phrase, on the best bantamweights in the world the same way they do at welterweight or lightweight. There's four or five really good bantamweights that exist outside of the UFC. If they let another one get away, I mean, that's a division they need to be building up. And Sterling's a young, surging guy. You got to keep guys him around if you can.
I mean, if Cruz is going to have like a second wind of his career, this is a fight you want for a guy like Cruz at somewhere down the line. Or even...
Yeah, I salivate over the thought of Cruz against guys like Almeida and Sterling.
Exactly. I mean, they're the future. To me, they're the future of this division if you want to keep this division around. But not my call.
Yeah.
So,
again, I hope he stays with the UFC because he's not in a position where being outside the UFC benefits his career in terms of trajectory. If he's able to get more money, then, you know, good for him. I mean, I like fighters getting paid.
Also, Ronda Rousey is on the cover of Sports Illustrated magazine, the swimsuit edition 2016. So good for Ronda.
Good for Ronda.
Keeping her name out there.
Yeah, she's got, stuff going on. Apparently, she got back to training last week. Just I hope she takes as much time as she needs. I'm not the biggest fan of Rhonda, but
Yeah,
A, I have
it
empathy
was
for.
not, it, look, I knew there was no way she was going to be back by July. After a
Oh.
beating, after a beating like that, had she won in dominant fashion, yeah, I can see it. But after that kind of beating, no freaking way. It was
Not with the other movie she was shooting as well.
yeah.
It's no, that just wasn't gonna happen.
So, all the better that we're getting Tate versus Holm now. So yeah, I'm happy about this development.
So yeah, good for Ron to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
All right, so I think that about wraps it up for this week, and we can just
Yep.
sign off early.
You saw a couple of movies this week.
All right, so regarding that, I don't know if you've heard about this, but a movie is making $150 million for the holiday weekend, and it's called Deadpool. Who would have thought that an R-rated Deadpool movie starring Ryan Reynolds that's faithful to the source material could be one of the biggest comic book superhero movie openings of all time, opening higher than every single X-Men movie that was rated PG-13. So I'm going
This
to say
is the
something
biggest
right here,
opening
Robin Lee.
weekend. This is the opening. This is the biggest opening weekend for any standalone superhero movie.
Other than the Avengers, which is,
Well, that's
well,
not a standalone. That's the team up. But
well, here's
Iron
the way.
Man,
Deadline
Captain
quiz, this is
America, Thor.
the second largest opening for like the first in any superhero, other than the Avengers. And so
But no,
regarding
this is
that,
yeah, this has
here's
beat
my point.
Batman,
This film being
Superman,
R-rated.
all of them.
So this film being R-rated, Winfrey. Here's my point. Because Hollywood's been doing this for years. You cannot turn an R-rated franchise into a PG-rated, 13-rated franchise, like they've tried to do in recent years with things like Terminator and Die Hard and what have you. You cannot, the Expendables. You can't honey dick the fans, man. You can't sell them a fake bill of. The Terminator. Is those the classic ones are R-rated and they have and they're R-rated and they have a certain bit of edge to them. They have a certain sort of quality to them that comes from them being R-rated films and R-rated franchises. Had Deadpool been PG-13, now maybe yes, that kind of gives it a wider audience that can't see it, but are they going to see it if it's PG-13? And if it's PG-13, is it going to have that same appeal? Is it going to be as funny? Is it going to be as interesting? Here, a big part of why this movie works is because it's not your typical superhero film. Because it's R-rated, it can do things that all these other superhero movies can't do, and that sort of helps in making it different. It doesn't follow the same structure. It looks different. It sounds different. In variety, is the spice of life. And we don't want all these movies to look the same or they are going to fail. And I'm not sure if Hollywood is going to learn that lesson from this film, but it's good to have. I think one reason this movie is so successful is that it doesn't have to be like everything we've seen before. We can see comic book movies are great and they have the potential to be even greater because they can be different things. And Deadpool is very different from everything we've seen before. And if it was PG-13, it would have just been a slightly goofier, maybe funnier version of what we've seen before, and it wouldn't have been nearly as unique. So go see Deadpool if you haven't seen it already. Zoolander 2, saw that, reviewed that. They're both garbage. Check out my reviews of both on the site. I'm very happy about Deadpool because, we saw it early. I was at one of the first press screenings for the film. We got that review out early, and I'm just very proud of that. And the review's doing well.
Yeah, I will be seeing Deadpool on Tuesday, and I've read Jeff's review, I've read a few others, so I have nothing to say until I've actually seen it. I can't prejudge. There's no
Spoiler
evidence.
free. It's spoiler free. You're not going to get spoiled if you read my review. Check out my MMA column as well. about Stephen Thompson and why Stephen Thompson should get the next welterweight title shot. Tyron Woodley, you're not getting a title shot because you're always sitting on the sidelines trying to go silver your way into a title fight. You don't deserve a shot at the welterweight title. Give it to Stephen Thompson. Give it to Wonderboy.
I agree with that. As a matter of course, about Stephen Thompson getting the next title shot, because I want to watch him and Robbie Lawler fight. I really do.
Tyron Woodley fight for the title.
All right.
No matter how many sycophantic retweets he does with his stupid little fan-made posters, no one wants to see that fight. And that's all that really matters.
Yeah. Woodley's a tough sell right now. I mean, it's been over a year since he fought. You got to at least stay active, man. All right, Jeff. Not next week because I'll be doing coverage, but the week after that we'll be back. We will. Wait a minute. Huh. Oh. Okay. That's my bad. Man. Crap. I don't think I can fix that.
Do we have a weird setting for next week or something, or do we have
You know what? I've got to extend this show, I think.
Okay.
It just occurred to me to double check on the date for Bisping versus Silva, and that's on the 27th, so that's next Saturday.
Uh-oh.
So actually we have to preview that for this show as well. I thought it was, for some reason I thought there was another couple of days in there when entirely my fault.
Oh.
No, we can run through this rather quickly, actually.
All right, well, let's do it.
All right,
preview then.
Part two, my apologies, everybody. That's entirely my fault. I should have double-checked the dates on those.
All right.
Anyway, the 27th, that's not a week from, again, a week from today, we have 83, then we have 84 on the 27th. Main event, Anderson Silva, Michael Bisping. This fight's been a long time coming. Bisping really wanted this fight to be for the title when Anderson was champion, but Bisping never quite had his momentum peaking at the right times. So we would lose the big fight that would set up for the title. But we're getting it now. It's on Fight Pass. Now that Anderson Silva's back after his suspension, after the whole Nick Diaz drug test nonsense, that whole circus, man. Not even a well-done circus. I would have picked Anderson Silva handily during Silva's prime. Even now, I've still got to favor Silva. Bisping, an aggressive striker, is just kind of how he does things. Tries to out-technique you, beat you with pace. Going at Anderson Silva is a tough sell. He's so good when it comes to countering with his reflexes and figuring out what you're doing. I mean, Bisping's not the easiest guy to stop, but I mean, the Nick Diaz fight being weird aside, I've got Silva here. I think he's going to take this one. I just have very little reason to pick against Anderson Silva against Michael Bisping. Even if Silva's now on the downside of his career. But really good main event. I mean, it's fun. Should be a fun striking battle, but I've got Silva probably by stoppage at some point.
I think this fight is fine for Silva at this point in his career because Bisping has never been all that dangerous of an opponent. He's never really had serious knockout power. Silva... Man, it's hard for me to talk about this fight. Silva, I think maybe probably should have retired by now, but he doesn't seem like he's ready to retire. I don't want to get into the whole thing about the drugs and PEDs and whatnot because, I mean, it is what it is, and I don't want, I'm moving on at this point. He served his punishment. He got his punishment. Maybe it should have been longer, but this is what we have. So he's fighting Bisping. Silva, even at this point, I probably would pick him to win. I guess it just depends. I mean, Bisping has ways to win this fight. He just can't. I think if he wants to fight Silva, he has to get in his face. He has to try and take him down, which he can do, and just try and beat him up. I think Silva's always had a problem with defending takedowns, and while he does have a very active defensive guard, it's always been a problem for him. And also guys who just sort of get scared of fighting him and letting him clown them. That veneer for Silva has been broken a little bit, and Bisping, he seems to be bucking on that. But in terms of technique, kickboxing, boxing, pure striking, I have to favor Silva. So I'm leaning towards Silva by decision. I'll just say that.
All right. Co-main event is also at middleweight. Gegard Mousasi is back fighting after that loss to Uriah Hall.
After getting his head kicked off.
Oh, bad decision. Bad decision. Especially since
dominated
that
really
first round.
This is really a matchup if you think about it. Talis Leite is just, I mean, he arguably could have won that fight with Bisping if you think about it.
Yeah, that was a close fight.
And Leite has, for the most part, looked outrageously well since he came back to the UFC.
Yeah, again, the only loss was that split decision to Bisping. He's improved his game. He's got some power in his hands. He's still got very, very good jiu-jitsu skills. I'm leaning towards Mousasi. I mean, you know, the issue with ducking right into that kick from Uriah Hall aside, Mousasi's a very consistent, very
dangerous, and
dangerous fighter. He's good on the ground. He's good on his feet. I think he's going to out-technique Latus and probably take home a decision because stopping Latus is not an easy thing to do.
I think he's going to dominate Latus, but, you know, we know Latus, if he shows up, he can be very dangerous as well. So Mousasi, I think Mousasi is going to be on his guard this time. I think he's going to fight smart, as it were, and not take a lot of risks. And I think he's going to try to win on points this time.
All right. Next up, we have Kiete Nakamura, who's in his second or third UFC. I think it's his second UFC stint. Yeah, that was outside the... Okay, yeah, he had one fight during his first UFC run. It was when the UFC would occasionally let guys take fights outside of the organization. He had one outside.
I got Tom Breeze here.
He submitted Li Jingliang.
Knocked out Cathal Pendred for us, so going with Breeze.
Yeah, Tom Breeze is a slightly scary individual. He's very big. Very, very good technique. Hard striker. I mean, the way he beat Luis Dutra was impressive. Knocking out Cathal Pendred is not easy. Nakamura, you know, veteran, been around a while, but, I mean, a comeback against Li Jingliang and being ready to fight a guy like Tom Breeze. Now, this is Breeze all the way. And our last main card fight, Francisco Rivera is fighting Brad Pickett. That's a fun fight. Man, both guys like to strike. Oh, I hate picking against Brad Pickett because he's such a nice guy, but I'm going to go with Rivera on that one.
I feel the same way.
Rooting for you, Brad Pickett, but
rooting
on the merits...
An emotional level, I'm rooting for Pickett because he's one of my favorite fighters, but I just have this feeling that Pickett's on a bit of a downside of his career. He's been through a lot of wars, and I just think I think Rivera has a little more left in the tank, but we'll see. You know, this I expect it to be a very fun, exciting fight, and you know, I hope it could get fight of the night, get these guys a little more money in their pockets. So whatever.
All right, those are the only four cards on the main fight. Oh, I had one other. I had a minor complaint about 82. There's 14 fights on that card.
Yeah.
This event is going to be 7 hours long. 82 is going to be long. That's.
You have your work cut out for you.
I do. And, man, again, I still think the UFC has struggled to find the appropriate way to pace events on free television, long events like this. But, hope for, again, there's some good fights on that card, so that complaint out of the way. I bring it up only because there's 4, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. There's 13 on this card, but I think 14 is the
Fight
highest they've done in a long time.
Pass. The Fight Pass
Anyway.
card, and they're all on Fight Pass.
Yeah, and they can play around with that a little bit more. On the prelims, there's a really good featherweight fight here, actually. Mike Wilkinson is taking on Makwan Amirkhani. Wilkinson beat Nicholas Backstrom. He's 2-1 in the UFC. Good, still kind of working his way up. Makwan Amirkhani is crazy. Dude's crazy. I love it, but he's crazy. He's 2-0 in the UFC. Spectacular finish of Andy Ogle. Good submission over Masio Fulin. I got Amirkhani there. I'm a fan of him, and I think he can win this fight. At bantamweight, two guys I don't know anything about. Davy Grant will fight Marlon Vera. Vera's name is shorter, so I'll go with Vera. At middleweight, Scott Askham is fighting Chris Dempsey. Askham had kind of an up-and-down UFC career, and Dempsey is kind of the same way. Lost to Ilir Latifi, lost to Jason Wilson, had the win over Eddie Gordan. I'll go with Dempsey there, but not sure about that. At featherweight, Arnold Allen is fighting Yautsin Meza. I like Meza. I think he'll take that one. He's had some rough fights. The Pettis fight was pretty rough. The Sam Cecilia fight was a very tough fight. I'm going with Meza there. Seems kind of like a gimme. At middleweight, Brad Scott will fight Krzysztof Jotko. I've got Jotko. At lightweight, I like this fight, actually. Norman Park is fighting Rustam Khabilov. I like Khabilov there. I think if he gets close on Park, and Park's kind of a judoka, so he'll try to close distance, Khabilov is going to throw him all over the ring. At heavyweight, Daniel Omialanchuk is taking on Georges Donho. I know I'm mispronouncing that, but I'm not sure his country of origin, so I'm not sure how the J's are supposed to be pronounced. Omialanchuk, gah. No, sorry, I'm confusing him with someone else. He's had a couple of rough fights, but beat Crystal LaRocca. I don't know anything about Danho, so I'll go with Omialanchuk. At lightweight, Teemu Pakkanen will fight Lucas Saveski. That's a tough one, actually. I'll go with Saveski. Saveski, he's Polish, so I had to remember where he was from. But Pakulin's not too bad either. And kicking everything off, David Timor will meet Martin Svensson. Go with Svensson because I flipped a coin in my head. All right, Jeff, we got a lot of the usual suspects for the European Fight Night cards here. Anything you're looking forward to on those prelims?
Norman Park versus Rustam Khabilov, definitely an interesting fight there. I mean, Khabilov, he's been having a tough time lately. He's lost a couple fights, but earlier in his UFC run, very exciting, very good fighter, and I think he's going to get back on track there. So that's the one that sticks out the most for me.
All right, and that will be again Saturday the 27th. So we have two events next week, again, the 21st and then the 27th.
Okay, so
I will have
we got back on
coverage
track
of.
here. We wrapped that up pretty well, I think.
We did, for having to fly by the seat of our pants there.
Pretty much.
I will have live coverage of both those events in the MMA Zone of 411 Mania, so stop by, say hello. You'll know what I'm doing.
We already went
a week from
previews
tonight.
and other stuff, so that pretty
Yeah, I
much
think we did
that does
everything
it for me
else.
this. That about does it for me this week, Winfrey. I will talk to you soon.
I will see you on the 28th, Jeff. All right, as for me, since I got to do 2 weeks worth of previews, this Wednesday, Mark Radlich and I will be reviewing Deadpool. You can read Jeff's review of it. It's spoiler-free, and Jeff does good reviews. So by all means, do that. Then again, Mark and I are going to talk about it. I haven't seen it yet, so again, no comment prior to actually witnessing the movie. Both of those events next week. Not this week. This week is free, but the week after, again, we got stuff. So check out the upcoming roundtables where official predictions will be made in the MMA zone. We'll be back here on the 28th to review both of those events. And I need to double check the date here. We will be previewing UFC 196, Dos Anjos versus McGregor. That's a big card. They really want that one to be big. Double main event. Couple of really good fights on that card, too, outside of the main event. So, Conor McGregor going for some serious history there. So, anyway, 2 weeks from tonight, the 28th, we'll be back for that. Double review, and we'll be previewing that show. Until then, thank you for being here. I do appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for telling your friends about us if you think they like the show. You can find us, again, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, however you found us. I appreciate it greatly. And I'll be back in 2 weeks with Jeff, and we will, again, be back on schedule. All right. Until next time, everyone, for Jeff Harris, I'm Robert Winfrey, reminding everyone out there to please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.